services and where your line drops are and everything else and the location of the generator. It could vary probably between $11,000 to $15,000. Let me let it drop and actually see, Rich, if you have a comment first before I go on. KC2QIQ.
Well, that's a lot of money, but I don't know. I was hoping it could be done for less. You said using natural gas?
PH with a comment?
Yes, Rich. That would be a natural gas system. That would be completely wired in, and you wouldn't notice any difference in, you know, if the power dropped out, it would automatically switch over, and you wouldn't notice the difference. The natural gas would come on immediately, and you wouldn't see a drop. And that system also includes a battery crossover inside of it as well. So in other words, it has batteries that give you maybe about a 5-minute crossover, and then the generator starts up in between, so you wouldn't see anything.
I think there's another station in there. You know, it doesn't have to be a system that, you know, like North Shore Hospital. I mean, if it kicked out the house for a couple of minutes, well, I don't care. Because, see, the only thing I'm concerned about is, Patricia. I think she would be agreeable to that, you know. If we can afford it, that's the whole thing. To be able to have a television set, to be able to cook and have the heat, and, essentials like that.
If you choose a system that's Spartan enough, Rich, I guarantee that an awful lot of the installation, not immediately, but slowly, I'm pretty sure that Barry would be able to help you. I know that he's assisted you quite a bit. Whereas if you go out and get it professionally installed in a machine that's large enough so you can run a lot of the appliances in the house simultaneously, and the generator itself is put into its own doghouse in the backyard with its own uninterruptible other network, so to speak, before the generator starts up, and it's got its own fuel supply, boy, that can become very expensive very fast. Now, Eric, I know he's got some comments on this, and after that, there's another person, something 2H. I'll pick you up right after Eric. Eric, you've got a brand new house. I know that you'd like to have uninterruptible power. You've gone through some of these decisions, and you're a guy that's pretty smart and electronic. Let's see how you chose it. KE2EJ, K2LAW in the TechNet.
All right, well, I actually got three things. One is, don't forget, I designed a TV station that is feeding the network, so you can't lose power for a millisecond. So that facility has a 175 kVA UPS supply, which will run for about, run the whole place for almost an hour, and down in the basement are two 500 kilowatt generators that run on diesel fuel. So what I'm going to suggest to Rich, although you're not mobile, I mean, if you've actually gone to a Home Depot, you'll see that there's a, usually when you walk in, there's a box which says Generac on it. It's an 8 kilowatt, and they've got a 6 kilowatt version, natural gas powered generator. And that, plus the electrician, plus the big major thing, which is the transfer switch, it's not a UPS, that'll cost you anywhere from about $8,000 to $10,000, you can see, depending upon who the installer is and who you get. You don't need to run everything in your house. Let me let it drop for a second. You don't need to power the world. You just need to power the important stuff, like the refrigerator. You don't want to lose all your food. You want to power your heating system, et cetera, if you lose it in the winter. And you might actually, if you have a modern stove that's gas-powered, you want to run your stove, too, because it needs a little electricity in order for the valve to turn on. For me, personally, when I rebuilt my house, you remember I stripped everything out of it and started with bare walls. I do not have an incandescent or a fluorescent light anywhere. When I turn every light on the house, I only draw 600 watts. So what I did is I have a bunch of batteries that came from the phone company, from brand new equipment, which they didn't bother to use. And I also collected some from some of the cell companies. Let me drop again. And I've got a 3 kilowatt inverter, a backup for IT stuff. I've got two of them. And a little transfer switch. And I can run on a full charge. I run the house with the refrigerator, all the lights, a couple of TV sets, the hot water heater, and the heat for the house. It runs for about 2 weeks before I have to charge it up again. So you can get creative and do stuff like that. Yeah, the only thing is with people who use generators, and I used to use a generator, and I used to make death cords to power things up. It's actually illegal to do that, and the only way to utilize the wiring in the house is with a proper transfer switch. And actually, there's a company now that makes a meter socket, the meter on the outside of your house, which you can actually plug your generator into and be perfectly legal. P2RIW, K2JX.
Yeah, give me a couple of words on that. That so-called meter socket that you talked about on the outside of the house. What does that look like? Roughly, what does that cost, Eric? That sounds awfully desirable. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
I don't remember the exact name of it because I'm out in Sheldon. I just finished some work out here. That's why doing some dropouts in the output. We have the house down in Florida, and the electric company will put it in for free. It basically is the socket that the meter plugs into. There's a transfer relay on the inside of it, and it's some electronics to make sure that you're putting in the proper voltage. It won't let you put in, say, 60 volts or 70 volts. It won't let you overvoltage the thing. It's a smart meter socket. It's in essence what it is, and for the life of me right now, can't think of the name of it, but if you want to see what they're using in Florida, you can go to lcec.net and look it up, and it's listed there. And the power company does it for free.
And Y2HF would comment.
Okay, Dennis recognized. Interesting information, Eric. There was a second person, something 2H, and maybe that was Lou, I'm not sure, but there was a person trying to sign in about 4 minutes ago. Who was that person? K2RIW in the TechNet.
Oh, yeah, this is WA2 Victor David Henry, WA2VDH. Just wanted to make a comment. I had a Generac 8KW natural gas generator put in right after Sandy, and with the plumbing, the gas plumbing, the transfer switch, all of the permits and everything, the whole thing came to $9,500. This is an 8KW Generac machine, and it handles pretty much everything in the house. Go ahead.
And that was John from Roosevelt. Okay, that's good information, John. I thank you. Lou, let's see what you got to say on this, and kind of curious what kind of standby power you've got, Lou. NY2H, K2LAW in the TechNet.
But then it's a focus.
NY2HF, Dick.
Okay, I did it again. I thought it was Lou. You've got it, Dennis. Go ahead.
What I wanted to say to Rich and what I want to say to everybody out there, listen, if you drive a Humvee, you're not going to get too far in a gas shortage. If you prepare your house with LEDs or fluorescents, CFLs, and you minimize your reliance on the electricity. Don't forget, you can use your propane barbecue during a power outage so that you don't have to use the electric stovetop. You can put a timer on the refrigerator so that it cycles every hour instead of every 15 minutes. You can do lots of things. You can run a pellet stove, which only uses 100 watts instead of all the circulators. Maybe you got a six circulator heat system with a blower and everything else going. There's many things that you can do before an actual event occurs to get yourself in a good position so that the generation that you need is minimal. And that's really where you want to get. You want to minimize it so that you use less fuel, because guess what? When you're out of power, the gas station is not going to have gas either, because they don't have power, because they haven't mandated that they have generation systems to
back to you, back to Matt.
Yeah, good information, Dennis. Lots of ways around this. During Hurricane Sandy, there was an amazing number of people that suddenly realized that, gee, I never bought that cigarette lighter charger so I can charge my cell phone from the automobile. Automobile sitting out there with this beautiful charged battery in the driveway, and they got a cell phone in their hand, and they can't charge it. And when they finally found some way of charging the cell phone, a significant percentage of those people found out the cell site wasn't operating because it didn't have a standby generator. The batteries and whatever at the cell site are good for some number of hours, certainly not much more than a day, unless it's got a real generator. And some of those cell sites had a generator, and I found out tonight, I was visiting somebody at a party, that a number of those generators at cell sites, somebody had come along and started stealing them. And there's a way you can find out who did the stealing and get them back, if you know what I mean. And there's some people right now being incarcerated because of doing that during Hurricane Sandy. So how you generate the power to keep you running during one of these events, how much power you need, how many of the circuits you're going to have running simultaneously, how efficient are your circuits, do you have those old-fashioned incandescent bulbs compared to the very modern light-emitting diode bulbs, lots and lots of variables here. But I can see that if you want peace of mind, you got to look at some ways of having your own power generation. And you know what Murphy's Law is going to do to you. Let me drop it. You establish the most perfect standby power generating system on your piece of property, and you've got real great control of where the transfer switch is, whether or not you did the inexpensive or the expensive approach for the transfer switch, and how you backfeed the rest of the house. Did you do it the illegal way or the legal way? Lots and lots of variables here. Once you set up that system perfectly, guaranteed, there will be 10 solid years where there won't be a single dropout. LIPA will be in there day in and day out for 10 solid years. It's going to happen. And if you didn't do that, a month from now they're going to go out and you're going to be complaining. Now let me call it Elmer's Law. You know what Elmer's Law is. Elmer's Law states that Murphy was an optimist. The real world's a little worse. But still, if you really want peace of mind, in my case, I've got a 1,500-watt generator where I can sip gas at a pretty small number of gallons per 24 hours if I'm not trying to run everything at once. Let me drop. And I also happen to own a 4-kilowatt generator, which is going to use gas about four times as fast. So if I want to run, I think I can run at a low power level one or two of the burners on the electric stove at the 1,500-watt level. I think I can do that, but I'm not sure. So I really want to run the electric stove and the oven because I want to cook a cake while the power is out. Yes, I have to use the 4-kilowatt generator. So maybe that's an approach. I mean, nowadays you can buy 4- and 5-kilowatt generators from your great big package stores for not a great number of dollars. You can also buy a small generator. And so the best of all worlds is that for the long range overnight, you use the small generator that sips 1.5 gallons per 24 hours if you're not standing on gas lines. And for that short period of time where you need a hell of a lot more power, you use the bigger generator. If this was the best of all worlds, the big generator, when it's only running at the 1-kilowatt level, would draw very little gasoline. And that's not the way they work. When you've got one of those great big generators and it's nearly idling, you'd be amazed how fast it's sucking up gas. It's just the way they work, and you got to get around that. So many of us have got the resources to buy a big and a small. I didn't intentionally do that. It happened that way, and I suddenly realized it's got some great capability. Anybody with any further questions on this? A great question that Joe asked. Any further questions or comments? Give me your call letters right now. K2LAW in the TechNet.
KC2QIQ.
Glenn recognized. Anyone else? You got it, Glenn. And I know that you had a significant standby generator at your house, and I think there was a slim chance that your generator was at a low level and the water came up high enough to give you some grief on that one. There was a significant number of hospitals and other places in New York City where the standby generation was in the basement that got flooded with seawater. And so just having a standby generator, which doesn't look far enough into the future to a once-per-50-year event with seawater into your basement, sometimes that is not enough. KCQ QIQ, K2LAW in the TechNet.
strikes again, Dick. That's it. Basically, everything went underwater. So the power went out completely for good. And, my comment was actually on a different topic. It's along the same lines, but it was something that Dennis had brought up before about equipment that fails due to surges and power interrupts and all kinds of problems. And one of the things I might have mentioned it before, but just something to bring up again, and certainly for Dennis's information, especially when he's dealing with other emergency service people, is equipment that can handle surges and all kinds of power fluctuations. There is a way of spotting equipment like this. When you look at the back ratings on a piece of equipment, usually on the back sticker someplace, let me let it drop for a minute. On the back of the equipment, there's usually a marking. Sometimes it's UL for underwriters. That tells you that's safety compliance. But there's also another one called CE. This is a very important marking. If you're looking for equipment that you know that you've got a lot of surges in your area, you know that there's a lot of other kinds of problems, it's always knocking out equipment, look for that CE mark, and you'll notice that those pieces of equipment will be able to ride right through just about any kind of like 4 kV spikes on the line, ring wave noise, over-voltaging, just about anything that can happen on the power line with a CE mark, that tells you that unit has been tested and confirmed that it works through all those kinds of power problems, and you won't see any failures. And they make it on your stoves, any kind of an appliance, and just look on the back. It's a very important thing, and people don't look for it, and you really should. KC2, QIQ.
A lot of equipment, N2EO.
Yeah, I've got a further question for you on this one. KC2, QIQ, Glenn, and this is, when you talk to Eric, KE2EJ, when he's running a really potent broadcast station, which has to be on the air, reliable, and his extremely valuable chunk of electronics has to be treated with tender, loving care. Therefore, he's got this very fancy, Variac-like machine, which has got servo motors on it, that if LIPA is putting out high voltage, low voltage, whatever, this machine is continuously adjusting so that he gets exactly the right voltage to keep his electronics happy. To your knowledge, is there a machine that a homeowner like Dennis could buy that automatically adjusts high, low voltage, and for the period of time that he's getting an over voltage or an under voltage, it completely automatically adjusts for him? Is there a machine he can buy that can do that? I know that it could be done with a Variac-like thing with a servo mechanism motor connected to it, but I'll bet you there's a solid-state equivalent. And if there is it within a reasonable number of dollars which Dennis would be willing to pay? So if he wants to regulate the fact that he's out there at the fringe of LIPA, and therefore the tail gets wagged very wide out there, if you know what I mean, voltage-wise, is there a thing he can buy that would automatically correct that for him? KC2QIQ, K2LAW in the TechNet.
Yeah, it's a very interesting topic, Dick. That's why in 1997, UL had come out with what they called their power directive of 1997, and it got updated again in 2003. And that's really kind of like old thinking, mainly because those systems don't work. Think about it for a minute. If you have a Variac and you get a power surge on the line, the power surge still goes through the Variac. Doesn't matter. You put a transformer to adjust the voltage down. You get the voltage spike, the voltage goes right through the transformer. Doesn't help anything. You can put a certain amount of things on there to try to compensate on the line at the bulk form. They were out there. There's some companies that still sell them. I can tell you that you're wasting your money. They're very expensive, and it's probably not going to do the job. The real deal is finding equipment that has a CE mark on it. If you have a piece of equipment and you're buying it and you're saying, you know something, this piece of equipment's always failing on me and because I've got terrible power here, the next time you replace that piece of equipment, replace it with something with a CE mark on the back. You'll see it. It's a little C and an E. Usually there's a UL marking on the label. It's usually right near the power cord. Look for that CE mark because the equipment will operate through all of those conditions. It'll operate through 88 volts to 264 volts. It'll operate under voltage spikes to 4 kV. It'll have, it's going to withstand it. In other words, a CE mark guarantees that piece of equipment, especially if it's failing and you're replacing it, just make sure you're replacing it with something with a CE mark and forget all about these bulk things that are going to be very expensive and probably won't do the job. KC2, QIQ.
NY2HF with a comment.
N3L, I think I've seen some equipment with the CE marking, and I believe Glenn is correct. Pick up the other stations with N2EO.
Okay, Rich, and Dennis recognized, but I got a quick question for Glenn on this one. I am guessing that what Dennis experiences out there is at least two kinds of grief. He's occasionally getting great big spikes, and the CE rating hopefully can get him through that. But I'll bet you there are periods of time where for an hour or 3 hours, he's getting 10% over voltage or 10% under voltage for some number of continuous hours. So he's got at least two kinds of failure. Instantaneous spikes, and that's a tough one, but where he's got some number of hours of over voltage or under voltage. Is there an inexpensive thing that he could buy, which is a poor man's equivalent of what Eric uses at his broadcast station? KC2QIQ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Eric, I need your help for a minute.
Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, you're listening to Bob Lenz. Give me a judgment call in terms of the audio coming from either side.
I just listened to the eastern end. The eastern end is a tiny bit lower than the western end. I'm listening to my voice out of both right now. It's pretty darn good. As I said, eastern end is just a slight push. It's a 1 dB lower. And you don't really have to readjust it unless you're right there with your knob in your hand. Eric, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm going to give you a little bit more. The thing is, I'm just at the point where it starts compressing, so I want to make sure it's not compressing. You don't hear it. Give me a minute. I'll turn it up. I'll call you back when I'm done.
Okay, yep. While you're doing that adjustment, I'm going to have Glenn answer that one. So when it comes to the 1 or 2 or 3 hours of under voltage or over voltage, should you just try to live with that, or is there a not too expensive machine that could correct that one, Glenn? KC2QIQ, KQRIW in the TechNet.
Okay, the over voltages and under voltages are completely covered in the CE criteria after 2003. So it's not 10% Vic. CE mark guarantees 20% of line voltage. So in other words, if your under voltage is 85 volts, it will operate continuously at 85. If your voltage is 136 to 142, it will operate continuously without any damage. That's what you're covering against. And you can even get more. In other words, if it's more problematic, just look for what's called universal input. Now, granted, you're not going to find universal input on a stove or a large, like a refrigerator. But the standard CE mark on a stove or a refrigerator or anything major, large appliance like that, probably is never going to rest more than 142 volts for 2 hours. I mean, it's going to ride right through it. It's not going to see any issues. The universal input is basically 85 through 264. So when you're buying your computers and other things, just look on the back. Most of them, a lot of modern equipment today, especially built since 2003, is universal input. Look on the back. You don't have to change any switches, do anything. You can put anything in there from 85 volts to 264 volts AC, single phase, and the unit doesn't know the difference. KC2, QIQ.
I
was flipping back and forth the whole time he was talking. I cannot sense any difference in volume between eastern output and western output. The audio volume seems to be perfect, Eric. KE2EJ, K2LAW.
Right, you do notice that the bandwidth of the audio through the link is a bit reduced, but ain't nothing I can do about that.
No, the audio is good enough, a little bit tinny, but the volume is just about right. Okay, Glenn, in the case of that CE rating where it can tolerate quite a bit of undervoltage and overvoltage, I'm a little bit worried about one thing, and that is that window air conditioner I used to use in the old days, the GE window air conditioner. If at the instant I turned it on, if it didn't see 110 volts or more, the generator would sit there stalled. The compressor would sit there and stall and not run. usually on a hot day where it had just been turned off and it's cycling. Are you telling me that a CE rated window air conditioner, let's say a 1-ton window air conditioner, are you trying to tell me that as that thing cycles, that compressor is going to be able to start at 84 volts? I'm a little skeptical on that one, Eric. Glenn, KC2QIQ, KQLIW and the Tech Man.
I also have a comment about that.
Okay, Glenn first, and then Eric. Go ahead, Glenn.
It's really not a problem at all. But if you find a piece of equipment with the CE mark on it, how they do it, Dick, is they rectify the input. If you look at a modern CE-compliant air conditioner, how it works is they take the input power line, it's rectified. It gets power factor corrected so that after rectification it gets boosted up to 400 volts DC. So now whether you have 85 volts on the input or 264 volts on the input, it regulates a 400 volt bus. The 400 volt bus goes into a basically into a chopper. And this, what happens is it just basically pulse width modulates motor control. No problem at all. KC2QIQ.
Wow. I'm amazed if the inexpensive air conditioners I can buy that are on sale will have all of that electronics in there today. I guess you're saying...
I didn't say inexpensive.
Okay, so I've got to pay a premium price to get CE rating.
I didn't say premium price. I said CE mark. Just be aware that there is such a thing as a CE mark, and then make your judgment accordingly. KC2QIQ.
You're telling me that if I take a ordinary appliance and compare it to a CE, that in some cases the CE is not a significant number of dollars more? Over to you, Glenn.
Absolutely. There's some areas where just because if it's mass produced in China and it has CE mark on it and it's been approved through UL or whoever the agency is that's actually done their testing to prove that it meets the CE criteria and UL criteria, it could be an inexpensive part. So some equipment with CE mark is expensive to do. Some of it's just cheap junk. If you look at it, it has no markings on it at all, and I wouldn't even plug that into a wall in my house. KC2QIQ.
What does the CE stand for? I thought there was something like that that was Canadian blank. I forget what the E was. Over to you, Glenn.
It's like European, NY2H, is the European Union.
Right on. Give that man a cigar.
Okay. Is the CE a French word? Does it have a English... Is it a acronym? Does it have a English... A word for the C and an English word for the E. Over to you, Glenn.
No, it's international and the standard is in English. The reason why it's accepted worldwide, Dick, is because the IEC standards, when you look at them, the 61000-2-4-10-12-13, each one of those stands for, line range, voltage spikes, all different types of criteria, surge, ESD, it covers a whole wide range of criteria. And when you have that mark, it means that equipment has been tested to all of that criteria on the power line. So, it's, as I said, and the sad part is, here in the United States, in order to sell something in Europe, that's a requirement. Here in the United States, you can buy whatever you want. It's the price of freedom. We have choice. But there again, people should really understand that is available, and especially with people with problems like Dennis is having. He's plugging things into the wall and it's just failing left and right. And he could get something with that marking and those problems just go away. KC2QIQ.
Don, good information, Glenn. Thank you. I know, Dennis, you wanted to add some more to this. NY2, Hotel Foxtrot, K2LIW and the TechNet.
Yes, thank you, Dick. I just wanted to thank Glenn for that CE. I wasn't aware of that one. That's pretty good. One of the problems is, like most households, this house was built in 2001, so most of the appliances are more than 10 years old, and they probably don't have the CE marking. And it's hard to replace them before they actually, end up in the trash from either under voltage or high voltage. And Dick, you were talking earlier about the swings. Yes, we get under voltage, we get the brownouts, we get the blips in power where there's a complete interruption, where the dryer is saying uh, PF, flashing PF, power failure, and we also get over voltage. Maybe because we're at the pretty close to the end of the line, you know, it's hard to regulate it. But what I'm trying to do at this point is get us completely off the grid. That's where I'm headed for, and that's what I'm going to do. The next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to build a wind turbine. Between the solar and the wind turbine, I think I can probably cover it all with the battery backups. So that's where I want to get to. Back to the net.
CEO, Judge.
Yeah, stand by a minute, Ridge. Boy, are you green.
Wow.
And to be completely off the grid, it's a good thing to be proud about, that you're thoroughly independent and the rest of the world are down the tubes power-wise and the grid could sink and you don't give a damn. Let me drop. However, storing electrical energy, to store 42 kilowatt hours, that's a serious problem without going to some really massive batteries and whatever. So except for the pride function of being able to say, I am off the grid, and I'm not even paying the minimum monthly charge to LIPA because I told them to take their meter and their wiring and just remove it all. I mean, it's a nice pride thing to do. However, where you can generate excess power, oh, I'm going to pick a number, 20 hours of the day and 4 hours a day, you're not generating enough, or you don't have enough reserve in your batteries. To use LIPA as a battery is a very desirable sounding thing. When you have excess power, where's the best place to store it? As long as your meter will run backwards, pull it back into LIPA. And during the times that you don't have enough power at midnight because the sun is not shining and the wind is not blowing, and then you take LIPA power and pour it into you. And maybe you can make it all come out very desirable. So using them as a energy storage has a lot going for it, because to have all of that storage in your own house is pretty tough for the average guy. You can handle it, but it's pretty tough. Anybody else with any? Oh, yeah. Rich wanted to make a further comment on this. N2EL, K2RIW. Go ahead, Rich.
K2J.
And Eric, right after Rich. Go ahead, oh, by the way, Eric, when I listen to East and West, right now Dennis is dead, full, quieting into the Eastern machine. What comes out of the Western machine for Dennis is 95% audio, 5% noise. That's a tiny little bit of glitchy noise in there, which I think is on the link. Not to worry, but you probably already know about it. Quick comments on that one, Eric. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
The glitchy noise is Fed Spectrum. It's coming from all of them portable, you know, phones, the unlicensed phones, and the building. I still have yet to find a nice, clean frequency to do this on. Yeah, I wanted to get all this stuff straightened out before I get to that, so I have to hunt. I'm going to bring another good spectrum analyzer upstairs and see if I can find a spot where those direct sequence spectrum little blips don't land. All right, two things. P actually stands in Le Langue, Francais, Conformité European. It used to be in the EC mark. There's actually a identification number based on the type of device and the conformity. Now, the other thing that I wanted to tell you, let me mess it up. Okay, the other thing I wanted to tell you is that I have, at the Plainview TV station, and I've also got it in New York, at the New York station, I have had recording meters that record every little blip and zip that the LIPA provides. I get a direct feed from a substation. You know, instead of 13.5 kV lines that come in, and after going through the transformers to bring it down to 480, or you look at it in terms of 110, the voltage will drop as low as 80 volts, and I've had it go as high as 145 volts. You can imagine how much craziness that can provide. So I just wanted to let you know that as nice as life is, sometimes they're really bad. K2RIW, K2J.
Oh, okay. Rich, I know you want to make some more comments. N2EO, K2RIW, go ahead, Rich.
Okay, Dick, you know, talking about the battery backup, or rather, yeah, battery backup or whatever for the gasoline backup, or however you want to put it. It gets prohibitively expensive. That's my concern. Let me ask you this. I think if I'm pronouncing it right, photovoltaic. In other words, photocells. Is that any cheaper, Dick, to use photocells to kick in when a LIFA system goes down?
Yeah, photocells and photovoltaic really are solar cells. In other words, these great big panels where, I guess if you buy the right brand name, you can get a kilowatt out of a number of square meters. You can get a kilowatt of power. I mean, the things are really putting out something in the vicinity of 12 volts, and then you've got to go through some electronics that takes the 12 volts of DC and inverts it up to 120 AC sine wave before you can run your appliances in your house and pump it back to LIPA. And you've got to have you've got to have an agreement with them where they install the dual directional meter, which where the meter will it'll charge you one rate when you're drawing power from LIPA, and at a different rate they will pay you for the power you pump back. And by the way, you don't break even on that one. In other words, you may pay in bottom line, when you add everything together, you may pay 17 cents a kilowatt hour when you use LIPA power, and when you pump it back to them, I'm going to pick numbers out of the air, maybe they're going to pay you 12 cents a kilowatt hour, if you know what I mean. But still, you can make it flow in the right direction, but photovoltaics really are solar cells, I believe, Rich. And maybe that answers your question. And to put it, if you've got a nice southern exposure on your roof and enough area on the roof and the sun shines it on it correctly in Massapequa, and the sun does shine in Massapequa, you could generate quite a bit of power that way, and it's an awful nice way to go. N2EO, K2LIW.
NY2HF with a comment.
Rich first, and then Dennis Nadeau. Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, Dick, I don't have too much to add, but maybe Dennis can give me some information. I'm wondering if it's so good, and it probably is, why are so many people going the other way? Are solar cells cheaper to install? And, I can't go on a roof, that's for sure. So I would have to get somebody to go up there and put it up. Well, you know the situation, Dick, with the injury to my spine. Let me turn it back to you because I know it's a directed net, and you can turn it over to Dennis or whomsoever, and to EO.
Yeah, I'm going to guess that Dennis, on a good sunny day, can generate 3 or 4 kilowatts of electrical power from his solar voltaics. And to put your money into solar voltaics, solar cells on your roof, and maybe even a panel of them in the backyard, there's a lot to be said for that one, Dennis. It is my guess that when you study a wind power machine, now maybe out there on the North Fork in Cutchogue where you are, I'm guessing it's Cutchogue, there's one of those North Fork towns, maybe the wind blows a lot harder. I know that in Huntington, I'd have to put up an awful big windmill to generate anywhere near the kind of power I could get out of solar cells on the roof. I think I get a lot more bang for the dollar out of solar cells in Huntington. NY2, Hotel Foxtrot, K2LIW. Go ahead, Dennis.
Okay, let me start here, Dick. Yes, I think we do get more wind out on North Fork. A lot of the vineyards out here have mega wind turbines that just about run the whole vineyard operation. Number two, Rich, solar is good only up until the point that LIPA throws the switch to shut it off during a storm event or something else. Once they stop supplying the power down a grid, your inverter shut off and you can't use the power that you're supplying, even if it's a sunny day. Number three, Cutchogue is actually the sunniest place in New York State. I don't know if anybody knew that. So that was one of the reasons we did that. There is a way that you can trick the inverters to think that the power is on. You have to throw the main switch so that no power goes down a grid. But, that's a haphazard way to do it. What I'm trying to say say is solar is great. You know, when it's producing, it's producing. You never notice it. You never even think about it. But when LIPA gets involved and they start overpowering, underpowering, and it shuts you down for 2 weeks, or you have a Hurricane Sandy or an Irene, and let me drop for a second.
Yeah, I got a quick question on that one, Dennis. If your machine was sufficiently adaptable during the time that LIPA is putting out 263 volts at your QTH, and if you could generate 264 volts, I'm wondering why LIPA wouldn't allow you to pump power back into the line at that time. NY2HF, K2RIW.
There's certain parameters that are set up. I don't know if it's, I don't know who sets it up. Maybe it's ULS, I don't know. But if it's outside of the parameter of the inverter, they want it to shut down so that the linemen don't get electrocuted in case LIPA or any other power generating company ceases to start generating power. They don't want the power going back down the lines for the linemen who would think that the lines are dead and all of a sudden they're energized. So that's why there's a parameter where they make these inverters, so they actually have to shut down, whether they're under or over. Beyond that, I don't know a lot about that, but, you know, it's a good safety measure. But at the same time, there should be a mechanism, and this is the problem with the solar, is that nobody talks about how you can use your own power during a power outage when your inverters are naturally shut down because of the lack of power from the grid. Back to you, back to Ned, back to Dick.
I can see how, for safety reasons, LIPA must have the equivalent of a kill switch on your inverter. So if a lineman is going to do service on your block, by some means he must be able to command off your inverter. Is that done by a direct hard wiring to a phone line or the power line, or is that a radio link? How does that kill command get to your inverter, Dennis? NY2HF, K2LIW?
Okay, Dick, that's easily summarized. That's programmed into the inverter. That's not something that the lineman has to do or LIPA has to do. If the power coming down the grid is either non-existent, underpowered, or overpowered, it shuts down the inverter. They only have a certain parameter in which they'll operate. So everything beyond that parameter, they cease to operate. Even though it may be a beautiful sunny day, you got no benefit of your generation. Back to the net.
Yeah, Eric recognized. Boy, there's another question I've got here. Is there a voltage setting control on your inverter where if LIPA says above 248 volts, I want you to stop inverting, and below 220 volts, I want you to stop inverting. Is that a settable command? Because I can see how the power company in Ohio may have an entirely different set of dropout voltages. How is that actually set, or is that a general design that all inverters for the United States have to have? Over to you, Dennis, K2LIW.
Actually, it's probably universal, but there is a set parameter that the inverters are set to, so that once it's outside of that safe zone, they're going to shut down. It's probably on a local level. Probably LIPA has a really sloppy high and low because they are not good at what they do. Maybe other power generators have a more defined tolerance. And maybe you can set it to that, but, you know, in my opinion, life is not the greatest, but back to that.
KC2QAQ with a comment.
Glenn Rebel with a question. Glenn recognized, person with a question. Both of you are right after Eric. Eric, go right ahead. Boy, I bet, Eric, you'd love to have 10 kilowatts of solar voltaics if this is the best of all worlds. W.
I just wanted to tackle on a couple of things. I've done a lot of research. And actually, I have a friend up in Massachusetts who's completely off the grid. Nipow company tried to blow him off. If you, let's know if there's any funding left for it, but LIPO will actually help you put in a solar voltaic system. And one of the requirements is that there's no local storage at home. Beyond what Dennis told you, actually, when LIPO puts the system together, they generally use a smart meter. The smart meter will send commands over the power line to the inverter. There's a number of different systems that the inverter uses. You know, there was actually one system that was based on broadband over power line. We won't get into that. That's the system that's in, like the Sunny Boy inverters. There's a few series of inverters out there that you can use. It's all of our tanks. Systems are somewhat expensive. I mean, a 200-watt canal, you know, costs you around $1,000. Whereas if you go to Germany, you can get a 200-watt panel for less than $200 because they manufacture them there. That's one of the reasons why solar voltaic panels are more expensive in this country is because the raw materials people would much rather sell it to Intel than they would to a solar panel manufacturer because it takes a lot more stuff and they get a lot more money by making semiconductors. Let me drop. And for this, there are a number of companies now that if you sign up with them, they do the installation, they provide the installation, they provide all the material. You basically sign a lease that says that they can have this stuff up there for 20 years, which is pretty much the life of the solar panel. And you reap the benefits of having some reduced cost of the electricity, but they get the major part of the profit. So those are the things that I wanted to throw out there. Oh, my friend up in Massachusetts, which actually his house, we have a low-power FM station. He actually takes care of all the radars for the FAA up in Massachusetts. I can tell you some really good stories that he's gone through. He's just finally changed some of the systems to relatively new stuff from the 50-year-old stuff that he's been using. He's still has some of that really old stuff out there. It's amazing how slow those people move. K2RIW, he's also got a number of wind turbines in his system, too. He generates hot water, he generates electricity. He's got some land, so he does a really good job of it. K2RIW, KTJ.
Fascinating. We amateurs really like discussing power, I can tell. Glenn, and then there's another person with a comment. Go ahead, Glenn. KC2QIQ, K2RIW. I thought Glenn had another comment. There's another person.
I see you, Dick.
Oh, sorry about that. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, and the problem is I just got a phone call in the meantime, and I completely forgot what I was going to mention. But yeah, oh, my goodness. Sorry.
Okay, I'll go to the next guy with a comment, and then we'll come back to you, Glenn. Who was the other person who had a comment? K2RIW on the TechNet. My name is John.
My name is Dick. Yeah, this is Sal from Staten Island, AC2LL. I've been listening to the TechNet from the start, from 8 to p.m., and this is a wonderful subject. And I just had a question about all the power generation for the house. In case of emergency, what have you, in case of a power outage, are there any specific requirements for running ham radios and such, you know, as opposed to a regular normal household, right? Will the same equipment work the same way that, you know, for ham equipment, basically? Is there anything special that needs to be done, hardened, you know, better wiring, what have you, in order to run hemp stuff? Thank you. AC2LL, back to Matt.
Yeah, I think I know what you're asking, Sal, and I think there is nothing special. In other words, if I've set up some method of generating standby power for my house, whether it be a generator in the backyard or solar voltaics into an inverter or whatever, a wind power machine, whether or not that 120-volt power, so to speak, in my house is powering the television set, a computer, a refrigerator, a light bulb, whatever, or a ham rig, I think there's very little difference. The good news is that ham rigs are fairly tolerant. Most ham rigs of good design, if you get a sudden spike of, let me pick a number, 180 volts on 120 volts, I think 95% of all the ham rigs will just glide right through that without doing anything bad. If you want to be a little bit safer, the kind of voltage limiting circuits we tend to put on our computers, some of the smarter hams, and Glenn has done this, will use that kind of network on your ham rig. In other words, the fancy electronics you put powering your computer to make sure it doesn't see any nasty glitches, you do that on the ham rigs. Glenn lived in Florida where he gets a lightning storm almost every single day, and if he didn't do that, he would suffer a lot of damage. Glenn's been through that, protecting his ham equipment for a pretty rough environment. Let him give us a couple of words on that one. Glenn, would you recommend the voltage safety equipment you use on a computer, would you be using that also on your ham rig, KCQ, QIQ, K2LIW, and the TechNet?
Most of today's new 110 volt stuff is all switching supplies, and you can run them up to 300 volts without care.
Beautiful. Let's see what Glenn's got to say on that one.
Yeah, the days of when people would run the surge suppressors in line strips and things like that was really kind of like a 90s thing. I remember when, you know, people were buying TV sets, you know, the guy would try to sell you, oh, yeah, this is a line conditioner you really don't want to get involved with that. I mean, if you have older equipment that you'd like to see, you know, survive a little bit longer, maybe having some of those old surge suppressing line suppressor type things might help a little bit, but they're no guarantee. I really try to tell people today is that if you have equipment that does fail and it has those problems, if it's not something that you can easily repair and get back, or it's not worthwhile, then you're going to buy a new piece of equipment, make sure it's got the CE mark on it. And almost all the new ham equipment does have, and computer equipment, and just about everything you buy today. If you look on the back, you look for that CE mark, and it is available, and they work just fine. And like Eric was saying, they're international line range. They work from 85 volts to 264, you know, average voltage, you know, continuous, you know. So the other comment I was going to make is I've designed tons and tons and tons of inverters. Want to let it drop? And what Dennis was experiencing was that when you attach a inverter, there was one side is basically a battery input or your solar voltaic, and you're basically pumping in like 70 volts or anywhere from like 40 to 70 volts into your inverter. And then on the other side, at the output, you're getting 115 volts, plus or minus some regulation voltage, you know, swinging up and down from there. But what's happening is if the line voltage goes too high so that the inverter doesn't damage itself, you have an OV circuit that shuts the inverter off. So at that point, you can't get any power out of it. If the voltage goes too low, you don't want your inverter sitting there driving a short circuit. Let's say if all of a sudden all the power goes out, it drops down too low. Now all of a sudden your solar voltaic is trying to drive a very, very low impedance, and it's going to pull out full grunt into basically a line that looks shorted. So the reason for those over and under voltages is really to protect the inverter, nothing more. There is ways of getting around that safely. Let me let it drop one more time. There are switches like Eric was mentioning before. Some of them the power company will provide for free. Sometimes they won't. You have to ask the power company. But there are other websites you can go on and find power disconnects. These are things that, like, if you are trying to hook up a generator to your house externally, basically when the line voltage from LIPA drops, it goes below the end of voltage, it literally just automatically is like a circuit breaker that disconnects their power from your house. So if you wanted to connect up a generator or something else at that point, you can safely attach a generator to your house. This is something that you might want to think about if you're attaching solar voltaic systems on your house, because this way, if LIPA does drop out, you can still power your house. So it's something you really, and it's also, they make three ways. They want to make the one that has solar voltaic, LIPA power, or, you know, utility power, and your generator. So you can plug all three into this box, and it will negotiate all three power coming into your location, so that, and even battery backup system. I think they call those quads. They're nice things, little things to have, but those little toys to add on the outside of your house, Dick. KC2, QIQ.
NY2HF for comments on that.
You got it, Dennis. You go ahead, Dennis. You got it.
Glenn, that's good information. One of the things I would say is that I'm not aware, and neither is the technician who installed the system, with a way besides basically following the letter of the rule. To get the inverter to produce power when the grid is down, or when the grid is overpowering or underpowering. That's one of the things that LIPA has pretty much domain over. So, in essence, not to say that we're looking at black helicopters, but if a utility wanted to shut down power generation, they could easily interrupt the power generation and put you out of business. They don't want you to be able to use the power when their system is down, because you might get used to the idea that you don't need them. Think about that one.
I am guessing, Glenn, that the way the inverter works is that it takes the raw voltage you put in, by whatever means, it steps it up to a higher voltage. I'm going to pick a number, 200 volts, because a sine wave of 120 volts AC does hit a peak of 167. Somebody guess it, it generates 200 volts DC. Then by way of a pulse width modulated H bridge, I can now, with a little bit of filtering, synthesize any sine wave you want. 60 sites, like 60 hertz, 50 hertz, 105 volts AC, 120 volts AC, 140 volts AC. By pulse width modulating, I can make any frequency. It's really a cycloconverter. It's the equivalent of a hi-fi amplifier, a modern-day bang-bang, as they call it, hi-fi amplifier with pulse width modulation, where the carrier rate of the pulse width is, let me pick a number, 20 kilohertz, as long as you've got FET transistors that can do that. I now can generate anything, I believe, if you've got a properly designed circuit. Maybe I'm being a bit naive on this one. KC2QIQ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Dick, you just basically described the basic the block diagram of the inverter circuit that I designed in 1991 for SEAG Electric Corporation, Cordy Electric, and ABB. And that circuit has been kind of like copied and modified by just about everybody under the sun, and I see it everywhere. And yes, that's exactly how it works, except that the modulation that goes to that power pulse of modulator has an internal timer, and it's what I call a dither oscillator. So that basically, if you turn it on, it will put out 60 cycles, or you can actually reprogram it. As a matter of fact, some of the new ones that I designed back in a little after 2000, basically they love them in Europe. They've been building them underneath, I think, like 5 or 6 different brand names over there. They can reprogram digitally to 50 hertz, 60, whatever you want, and then they automatically synchronize themselves to the power grid. So, that's pretty much how it works, Dick. Case 2 QIQ.
Dick, you got to get a mailbag?
Yeah, I know. And we've got to pick up the man in Reno and the mailbag. Well, wait a minute now. The good news about the mailbag is ordinarily we have to do it in the first hour because the people who need that quite often go to bed early. The good news is this is a holiday weekend, tomorrow being a holiday. The kids can stay up a little bit later. So I'm going to stretch this a little bit more because we got a lot of excited people. More power to you, if you know what I mean. We're going to get to Reno, Nevada. I think we should move on. This subject of power, that I know we went pretty far left of center of your original question, Joe. But as you can tell, there's enough enthusiasm on this subject that I know we can bring this up again next week. Back to you for a final on this one before I go over to Reno, John. Here we go, Joe. W8-2-L-Y-Y, you asked for beauty. K2-L-I-W. Look what you caused, Joe.
That's because inquisitive minds want to know, Dick. You know what? I like bringing questions like this up to the net, you know, and seeing something like this getting carried on for an hour or so, because it really does, really stir everybody up with their thinking. With different things, but I think you basically answered most of the questions I had basically signed in with we're looking for the answer to. So thank you very much. Back to the next guy. W8-2-L-Y-Y.
Very fine, Joe. Good, clean audio. Your audio is a little bit lower than I'd like it to be, but sounds very good. Alrighty, I know we've kept, I think it's Arnold,